Welcome to Look Ahead Radio and Viewpoints Around the World. My name is Tom Arms, and in a moment I'll be joined by my old friend Lockwood Phillips. This week we're talking about the media. Trump's statement about enemy of the people, or enemies of the people. We're also talking about Brexit, and the possibility of a no-deal Brexit. And finally, armpits in Japan. I hope you enjoy listening.
Welcome to Look Ahead Radio with Tom Arms and Lockwood Phillips.
Viewpoints around the world with Tom Arms of LookAheadNews.com and Look Ahead Radio. And as we begin today's program, again to remind many of our audience, and this portion of the program has been pre-recorded to accommodate the five-hour time change between or distance between ourselves and the United Kingdom, where we find our host and guest this afternoon in London, England. And with that, Tom, good afternoon to you. Actually, as we speak, early evening in your time, but good afternoon to you.
Good evening, afternoon to you, Lockwood.
So as we begin the program, of course, we are interested in knowing what the weather's like there in the United Kingdom. And of course, I failed to mention, I'm curious if what we're hearing about the heat is beginning to be a problem, not only in the United Kingdom, but around Europe. But let's start with just the weather in your fair city of London.
Beautiful.
Absolutely
really? Gorgeous. The last week, it's cooled down a little bit. It's climbing back up again. We had some thunderstorms over the weekend, which calmed everything down, cooled everything down. The temperatures now are in the upper 70s. Blue skies, lovely weather. I'm really enjoying my morning cycle rides. It's perfect. But having said that, fortunately or unfortunately, it's going to continue, which means that gradually that mercury is climbing higher and higher and higher again, and likely to do so through the rest of the summer. So it's going to get really hot again.
Now, what was the situation there with rain? I know that you were anticipating some last week, and I know that there are certain regions of the of Great Britain that are suffering from significant drought. So what are the water conditions there in your fair country?
They still have a hose ban up in the northwest of England. Just one rain isn't enough.
Mm-hmm.
The thing about rainfall is it really needs to, if you've had a long drought,
takes time,
and the water comes down, the ground soaks up
right
all the water. It doesn't run off into the reservoirs. And so really the reservoirs have not filled up again. So we still have a water problem.
Well, we've got just the opposite here. We've had a tremendous amount of rain. And as a matter of fact, our groundwater situation is now at the point where it's beginning to concern folks. We've got so much. So
we'll send some over here.
We would love to, and or send it to California, where we're seeing a variety of fires. I'm curious, speaking
America
of...
America first.
Yes, absolutely, America. You've got it right, Tom. Tom Arms of LookAheadNews.com and LookAhead Radio with us this afternoon. Tom, I mentioned California and, of course, the fires there. We were chatting last week about the situation in Greece, Athens, the vicinity of Athens, and of course, fires in Scandinavia. What's the situation there in the European community?
Well, I mean, the fires have died down in Greece. Again, it's gotten a little bit cooler. There's talks that it might have been arson.
Mm.
There's wow. a lot of talk about the lack of planning, that is, building regulations,
mm-hmm.
And how that contributed to the fire. And it's all being investigated. Certainly, as I said last week, the European community has chipped in and helped as much as they can in both Greece and Sweden. And I hope that there are not going to be any more fires in the summer, but
Wow. I think there's probably a very strong likelihood there will be.
Well, we're having significant fires here, predominantly, of course, in California, some in the northwest of Seattle and Oregon. But the big focus right now is in California. It's become really kind of tiresome, these fires. So, yeah, it is a worldwide situation. And, of course, I know that there are also observations related to the growing heat of the summer as well. So that being said, we'll be paying attention to that and worldwide issues as well. Moving on to items of interest there, and I'm just curious how the coverage is in the European community. We've got the big story, I think, and I want to start off with you today here from the perspective of the U.S., is the trial with Mr. Manafort, and how is that being covered? And what's the in other words, has the European press sent any reporters here that you know of to pay attention?
Yes, it's being recovered or covered by all the major press here. They will all have people there in the courtroom.
Mm-hmm.
If they don't have their own people, they will be taking the Reuters or the Associated Press feed. Or feed from Deutsche Presse Agentur or Agence France Presse or something like that. At this stage, obviously, it's only the start of the trial.
Right.
We don't have any real testimony as yet. So the defense and prosecution are just laying out their cases. A lot has been made. I don't know if it's directly related. A lot has been made about Giuliani and Trump's assertions that collusion is not a crime.
Mm-hmm.
So that's gotten quite a bit of play along the lines of, why would they be saying collusion is not a crime?
Well, so now
why would they be covering their backsides?
Well, the other aspect of that, the argument is that all politicians are constantly colluding. They're colluding with various resources and sources. So they're, of course, to defeat their opponent.
Also, but collusion conspiracy?
Yes, exactly. So,
I mean, if you look it up in Roger's Thesaurus, they're synonyms for
right.
each other.
Yeah, I know.
I always want to say cinnamon instead of synonym.
Well, because you're hungry, and it's that time of day for me. The interesting aspect of this is that this has caught the attention of the European community.
Oh, yes. Well, I mean, as I can't stress enough that what happens in America has a major impact over here. And although you don't quite recognize it in America, actually what happens over here has an impact on you.
Well,
when you have a country which is the world's biggest economy and has the world's biggest nuclear arsenal and the world's biggest military and everything else, it's going to have an impact on other parts of the world, whether you want it to or not.
It's something that we sort of take for granted. We just maybe we are. Let's speak of myself. Maybe I'm sadly mistaken and very much in error, because we just of the process. We just go through our day-to-day activities here in the States because we're obviously trying to make ends meet. We're trying to fill the coffers of both of our businesses, but sadly also of our state and federal governments that are constantly spending money hand over fist. So we don't even think about this issue of the nuclear arsenal. And so far as the economy is concerned, the average employee, the average worker here in this country is just going through our daily routine. It is fascinating. That's one of the reasons why I enjoy talking with you every week, Tom. And again, Tom Arms of LookAheadNews.com and Look Ahead Radio with us this afternoon about, the perspective of the European community.
Just say something, Lockwood?
Sure.
And that is, what happens when you take a marriage for granted?
Oh, well, you get predominantly a divorce. So, yes, I don't
so
know.
So there are dangers in taking things for granted.
Well, I understand that. And so I find this interesting. And again, as I said just a moment ago, I think this is one of the values of our conversation. And again, we're going to be continuing this conversation in just a few minutes with Tom Arms of LookAheadNews.com and Look Ahead Radio here on Viewpoints Around the World.
Look Ahead Radio will return in just a moment. Welcome back to Look Ahead Radio. Here is Lockwood Phillips.
Viewpoints around the world with Tom Arms of LookAheadNews.com and Look Ahead Radio. Just to remind you, this portion of the program has been pre-recorded to accommodate Tom's sleeping schedule since he is some 5 hours ahead of us. So as this is airing, it's moving on towards midnight where he is in London, England, where we heard just a few moments ago. It's a little, well, the weather's beautiful, but he is concerned that the temperatures will begin to rise here or are in the process of rising. Tom, speaking of rising temperatures, of course, we were chatting a few moments ago about the Manafort trial and the interest in the events here in the States. We find that fascinating and interesting. But let's move to another item you've put on your list. And apparently this has generated some conversation there in the European community among members of the press, I'm sure. And that is an interview that recently President Trump had with Mr. Salzberg, the the publisher of the New York Times. And this has generated some interest, apparently.
It has. It generated a lot of interest here. And what Mr. Salzberg said was that by describing, as you probably know, what Mr. Salzberg said is that by describing the press or the media as the enemies of the people, mm-hmm. he is enabling, empowering people to go out and take action against the press. Now, and he's saying that this threatens the lives of journalists. And people say, oh, well, I mean, how many American journalists have been killed? Well, I can tell you that 4 have been killed in Europe.
Right.
In the past year.
And by the way, let me just digress here for a moment, just very quickly, and you may not be aware of this, but there are 3 Russian journalists that were killed in Africa.
Yes.
In
Central African Republic.
Yes.
Yep. And these people, the ones who've been killed in Europe, were investigative journalists mm-hmm. who were investigating right-wing conservative government here in Europe, they didn't like it, and someone didn't like it. We don't know if it was someone in the government or someone associated with them or supports them or what, because nobody is yet to be arrested, but they got murdered.
Mm-hmm.
Now these people, these governments are encouraged. As I said, you know, the United States is leading the free world. They're leading democracies. So when the president stands up and says that the media are the enemies of the people, people in other countries say, yeah, you're right.
Well, the perfect
let's do something about it.
Well, the perfect example of that would be Turkey, where President Erdogan has, I think, imprisoned, what, about 1,000 journalists?
I think it's 1,500 now.
Oh.
And the United States cannot criticize them. Otherwise, you know, they would be accused of hypocrisy.
Right.
How can you say that the journalists are the enemies of the people and then criticize someone mm-hmm. for locking them up?
This is a significant change. And I have to say that it's a concern, myself being a journalist, and also the recognition that the fair and continued communications between various resources and individuals is imperative for the civic community and civilization to maintain itself. I agree with you, Tom. I think that this is...
I'm glad I'm sitting down.
I'm glad you are, too. Oh, well, we now know that our guest, Tom Arms of LookAheadNews.com and Look Ahead Radio, is reclining. All right. But the other aspect of this, let's talk about this. The editorial pages of the European press, have they picked up the cudgel and also challenged their own governments?
Yes. Yes,
okay.
They have.
All right.
You know, they have indeed. They have said that. But, you know, having said that, generally, if we're talking about the West European press,
mm-hmm.
Then they, you know, you won't get Emmanuel Macron or Angela Merkel or Theresa May referring to the media as enemies of the people.
Right.
They don't do it.
Okay.
They regard them as a nuisance at times, but an important nuisance, you know, a bit like, you know, the political opposition. They're there. You got to put up with them. You know, we'd rather we didn't get any criticism from them. We'd rather it was nothing but praise, but sometimes they make a point.
Here's a question.
If we're talking about East Europeans and Turkey, it's a different matter. And they, of course, have moved themselves into controlling the media in those countries.
Right. And here's another question, though, for you, Tom. And this goes back to a topic we've discussed many times before. And that is the role of digital media, and particularly Facebook and Twitter. Two questions. One, have those in some way supplanted the standard traditional press, being predominantly print and, I would say, broadcast, but predominantly print as well, because that is where most of the reporting is done. And I say that intentionally. Have those digital devices supplanted those forms of communications? And the second question associated with that is, have those digital forms of communications actually incited more of the negative reaction from the public? So first, have those sources supplanted and or amplified the news coverage? And then second question is, what impact has that had?
Okay, I'm not going to answer that directly, but I think I'm going to give a more interesting answer than you anticipated. Because there was a report just this last week from a British parliamentary committee on that very subject.
Wow.
And it says that the social media has become a major threat to democracy.
One more time.
Social media has become a major threat to democracy. They also were very loud in their condemnation of the phrase fake news. They don't like it. They would like to see it stopped. The reason is because the word or the term fake news is too often used to describe news that you don't agree with. Not false news, but news with which you don't agree with. And fake has a very emotive connotation. It means it emotes malicious slander. It sort of implies that. This is what the parliamentary committee says. But the key is that social media has become a threat to democracy. And the reason is because people have always tended to read what reinforces their own views.
Right.
They've always leaned that way. You know, if they're conservative, they will listen to conservative talk radio stations, or they will try and read conservative columnists in the newspaper. In this country, the newspapers are generally divided, and the same throughout Western Europe, generally divided among party lines or ideological lines. And you buy a newspaper which reflects your views. But what social media has done, it's given an opportunity to compartmentalize those views even more. And to allow people who are extremists of one persuasion or one extreme or the other to seek out and find their extremist views and have them echo back at each other and to link up on a global basis with other people who have those extremist views.
You know, the other aspect of this, Tom, and that goes back to the printed word. In the case of the printed word, several things are factual in the sense that we know who's responsible for it. There is an accountability. And then secondly, because of the printed word, and of course, I am very, very fond of the printed word in my capacity with the newspaper, as you yourself, having formerly been a print journalist as well, that we're looking at greater time of, if you will, of consideration of what is being written and spoke of being written and directed at the audience. Whereas in the case of social media, it's very quick. It's also appeals very much to emotions and less, I would argue, to the contemplative nature of information. I commend the British Parliament on their efforts there to review this, but I think this is important.
I think Lockwood, one thing they want to do is to regulate the platforms, Facebook, Google, Instagram, Twitter, who have been saying that they're nothing more than platforms. They don't have the same rights and responsibilities, or they don't have the same responsibilities of a publisher.
Right.
And this is being challenged now, not only in the British Parliament, but in other parliaments, that they should accept that they have the same responsibility that a newspaper publisher has. And that means that they're subject to the same laws of libel and slander,
you know,
the same laws relating to hate crime,
mm-hmm.
The same law. Well, you know, I can go on
and
on.
No,
different laws that, at which you are aware as a newspaper publisher, that you have to abide by.
Right.
And there's no reason why Google or Facebook shouldn't have to abide by the same laws.
As I sit smiling behind the microphone, because both Tom and I are very much one in agreement, but two,
this is so boring today.
I know, not hardly at all. Tom Arms of LookAheadNews.com and Look Ahead Radio. And what we're hearing, Tom, is a reaction now from, the European community and, initially the European community. But I think this is important and it may set a new trend. Tom Arms of LookAheadNews.com and Look Ahead Radio with us this afternoon. Viewpoints around the world.
Look Ahead Radio will return in just a moment.
Observations of an Expat by Tom Arms from LookAheadNews.com. Donald Trump and his mouthpiece, Rudy Giuliani, are right. Collusion is not a crime. In fact, there is no crime of collusion in the U.S. federal code. There is, however, a law against conspiracy. Conspiracy means that you planned an illegal act with others. You didn't have to commit the act. Just planning it is a crime. If the crime was committed and you knew about it, then you're an accomplice. If a person helps to plan the robbery of the Bank of England, but is in another country during the actual theft of the gold bullion, they are just as guilty as the hooded gunmen who broke into the vaults. As well as a law against conspiracy, there's a U.S. law against a federal campaign accepting something of value from a foreign agent. This can be money or information. There's also a law against obstruction of justice. That law is breached when a person obstructs, threatens, or coerces prosecutors. And finally, there is the federal election law, which requires candidates for elected federal office to declare all campaign expenditures, including those made to prevent the publication or broadcast of information detrimental to their campaign. Donald Trump is being investigated for violations of all of the above, and the net is tightening, which could explain why his tweeted protestations of innocence and attacks on Chief Investigator Robert Mueller are growing increasingly shrill. This week, the public's mind has been focused on the conspiracy charge because the trial of his former campaign manager, Paul Manafort, has started in Alexandria, Virginia. Manafort is not on trial for anything involving the Trump campaign. Instead, he is charged with 18 counts related to tax evasion, money laundering, and bank fraud. And that is just the current trial. Manafort faces a second trial in September in a Washington, D.C. court at which he's due to be charged with making false claims under the Foreign Agent Registration Act and witness tampering. Although neither of the above trials directly relates to the Trump campaign, Manafort is still a central figure in the claims that Donald Trump Jr., Jared Kushner, Manafort, and possibly the president himself conspired with agents of the Russian government to receive information to help Trump's campaign against Hillary Clinton. The claims involve the June 2016 meeting at Trump Tower between the three men, British music publicist Rob Goldstein, and several well-connected Russians. The meeting was set up by Goldstein, who told Trump Jr. that the Russians had some dirt on Hillary. "I love it," Trump Jr. tweeted back. What happened at that meeting and who knew what when has been the subject of several congressional interrogations, investigations, and reports. It remains central to the Mueller investigation. Did they talk dirt about Hillary? Or did they talk about sanctions against Russia? Or did they, as Trump Jr. disingenuously claimed, discuss the adoption of Russian babies? Did Donald Trump know they were talking? And finally, does it matter if they actually talked dirt if the Trump campaign went into the meeting expecting dirt? Manafort knows, but he is not saying. The theory is that Special Prosecutor Robert Mueller has compiled a list of charges that can put Trump's former campaign manager in prison for life, and he will drop the charges if Manafort flips and turns on his former boss. So far, there is no sign of a flip Manafort. This could be for several reasons. He may think he can best Mueller in court. He may be innocent. He may have been promised a pardon by the White House. Or given the Russian penchant for murdering political opponents abroad, he or his family may have been threatened by Moscow. Regardless, the Manafort trial is only the first wave in Mueller's assault against the White House. 32 people have been indicted so far. He is slow, methodical, and determined. He won't give up, no matter how many times the president tweets the demand for Mueller's dismissal.
We now return to Look Ahead Radio. Here is Lockwood Phillips.
Viewpoints around the world with Tom Arms of lookaheadnews.com and Look Ahead Radio. Tom is joining us from London, England, where it's going on towards midnight as we speak or as we broadcast this program. So therefore, it has been pre-recorded to accommodate his sleeping schedule. Tom and I were just chatting a few moments ago about the role and impact of the social media and the digital media for that matter. Let's move on to a few other items. And I think this is an important series of topics. Let's talk now about Brexit, the British exit from the European Union. I did see with interest that the home agency, I'm not really privy to the structure of your government there in the United Kingdom, but I saw that they have in essence prepared the mobilization of the British Armed Services, British Army, in the case of a no deal Brexit. Okay, why would that be the case? Is this sort of like calling up the National Guard, Tom?
Yes, it's exactly like calling up the National Guard. It's because we have various regulatory agreements on to deal with things like food, medicines, pharmaceuticals, tariffs, and so forth. If there is no deal, then those things will or should or are very likely to simply stop.
Okay.
And that's called we're calling it the cliff edge. They're going to stop at the end of March 2019, overnight, if there's no deal. In which case, the supermarkets are being told to start stockpiling supplies now.
Wow.
The army is being told to stand by to distribute medical supplies to the needy. The ports are being told to set up 17-mile-long car parks to deal with the trucks that would be queuing up or lining up to get onto the ferries, because it's going to take a lot longer because it's going to have to go through customs.
Mm-hmm.
These are all the things which people who were opposed to withdrawal from the EU said were likely to happen.
Well, no,
and everyone said, no, it's fear factor.
But wait a second.
It won't happen. It might not happen.
Well, it might not. But here's the thing I want to bring up here. You know, really, the rest of the European community loses as well, and they would equally have disruptions. It strikes me that while that this is a worst-case scenario, that there's going to be some understanding and arrangement, is there not? Or
there's a difference. You know, there are 27 other countries. Okay,
right.
A lot of people say, yeah, oh well, you know, the EU is going to suffer too.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, the EU will suffer. Yes, it will suffer consequences, but that suffering will be divided between 27 countries, and on the other side, it's one country.
Yes, but at the same time,
that's the big difference.
But at the same time, it's going to, well. Let's if there are 27 countries, but there will be varying degrees of discomfort and interruptions in those 27 countries. In some of those countries, I would venture to say the interruptions and disassociation would be very uncomfortable, and likewise, they may have a similar conflict on their hands.
And another point is the countries we're talking about where there's likely to be disruption of France, Germany.
Mm-hmm.
Denmark, Ireland, which really is in a difficult position, Belgium, and the Netherlands. Those are the nearest neighbors. To a lesser degree, Portugal and Spain, because they have access to fishing grounds.
Right. So we're...
But what's happened is, in the UK, they have been so divided
mm-hmm.
over... And they've had so many political infights within the government... over what negotiating position to take on which issue is that they have not worked out any strategy. They haven't had the time to do it. Whereas these countries, there is nothing that divides them. All they have to do is think about what to do in case of no deal. So they do have plans in place of how to cope. Well, whereas the British are only now beginning to think about it because they just couldn't envisage that there wouldn't be a no-deal scenario.
Okay, now, very quickly, because we're going to move on to other items, but you have two other challenges there with the Brexit issue, Scotland and Northern Ireland, because Northern Ireland, for all intents and purposes, and please correct me if I'm wrong, is a quasi-separate country. But both of those communities, both of those countries, are not interested in exiting the EU, and in fact, would be an opportunity for the flow of materials into Great Britain, into the European, into the United Kingdom. So, well, I say the United Kingdom, into Great Britain. So what's the future there? How are those two communities?
Okay, it's a bit more complicated than that.
Is it?
One thing, Northern Ireland, Northern Ireland did vote to leave the EU.
Oh, okay. I had it right backwards. All right, Grant.
Okay. Where Scotland voted to remain in the EU. Now, Scotland, their foreign affairs, and both countries' foreign affairs are determined not by them, but by the government in London, in Westminster, as they say. They're supposed to leave it to them to decide. But what's happened in Scotland is, of course, it has given a renewed impetus to the independence movement in Scotland.
Okay.
Because when they had their independence referendum a few years ago, one of the reasons people voted to stay in the United Kingdom was because they were told they would have to leave the EU.
Okay.
And that now, in the case of Northern Ireland, it's a bit more complicated. Because of the Irish question,
right?
That Ireland will be staying in the EU. There's no doubt it will stay in the EU. It gets a lot from the EU. It will have to close, it seems, it will have to close the border with Northern Ireland and set up customs posts and everything else if there is a no-deal Brexit. Nobody wants a hard border between North and South Ireland.
Okay.
Because that would lead or encourage renewal of the troubles in Northern Ireland.
Right. And we won't get into the details on that, but I think that's I got them confused, Northern Ireland and Ireland. So, all right, that's one of those issues. Let's talk here for a moment related to politics. They're still in the UK. British Labour Party and a crisis over anti-Semitism and left-wing takeover. Talked about this in the past, and we're seeing.
Normally, you know, you don't pay much attention to the Labour opposition or to the opposition party. You just pay attention to the government. But I think you really should be paying attention to what's happening in the opposition Labour Party at the moment, because at any moment, the current Conservative government could fall, and Labour is well positioned because of the unpopularity of the Conservatives, is well positioned to take over.
Well, here's my question for you, which is a little bit of a surprise. I'm going to get this down to another topic here, and if we've got time. I see a note here, crisis over anti-Semitism and a left-wing takeover. All in the Labour Party? Because if the Labour Party, Labour Party is...
The leader of the Labour Party, Jeremy Corbyn, has always been on the far left of the party. But it was thought that, you know, when he became leader, you know, like all these people, they become leader, you know, the reality sort of hits them in the face and they start moderating their views. Well, he hasn't. He hasn't. He's every bit as left wing. And he's engineered it so that a lot of the far left in British politics, and every country has a far left. Right.
We've got them here.
Right.
We've got them here in the States.
Left now thinks they have a hero in the form of Jeremy Corbyn. So they have been signing up in droves to join the Labour Party. And he's changed the voting laws within the party so that they have a lot of power.
You know, have you all
and
been...
So, for instance, his shadow chancellor, or the person who'd be Treasury Secretary, is an avowed Stalinist.
Oh, my goodness. All right. So, yeah. Okay.
Now, That, on the subject of anti-Semitism,
yeah.
On the subject of anti-Semitism, this is very important, because that's where he could fall down, is Jeremy Corbyn has shared platforms in the past with Holocaust deniers.
Okay. I want to really, because we got to get into the issue of the liberals on retreat in Europe. The question I have for you, have you been paying attention? Has the European community paid attention to what's going on here in the States? Because it's very similar with the, of course, the growth of interest in Bernie Sanders and the recent election in New York with Ocasio-Cortez, who's an avowed socialist as well. There's a lot of similarities. Has the European community had covered any of that by any chance?
No, not
okay.
Not yet.
I
think people are seeing a lot of similarities between the rise of Trump and Brexit and I think you know, people are polarizing in both regions.
Okay.
On the left and the right.
Okay, I think it's just an interesting observation. We've got 2 minutes to go here before we go to the break. Liberals on retreat in Europe? Am I because you're telling me?
Well, basically, that was I took that from a speech by Viktor Orban, who is the prime minister in Hungary. Now, Viktor has sort of taken up the banner. He's a leader now. If you like, of what you might call the what he calls illiberal democracies, which basically opposed to the traditional Western liberalism of Europe, and more in favor of a more strongly nationalistic right wing form of government, which is elected.
Okay.
So what he calls it illiberal democracy. Now, you've got parliamentary elections coming up next year, European parliamentary elections, and Viktor Orban is predicting, and he may be right, that what you're going to have is the right wing in Europe taking control of the European Parliament.
All right.
He says that parties like the Front National in France, Geert Wilders' party in the Netherlands, the Alternative for Deutschland, the Fidesz party in Poland, that they are going to sweep the board in European parliamentary elections and push out of power what he calls the liberal elite, which has been in the European Parliament since it was founded.
Okay, we're going back to go to a break. I've got a quick question for you. What impact will this have on the future of Brexit? Any at all?
On the future of Brexit, probably none.
Okay.
I mean, nobody, not even the Viktor Orban is in favor of Brexit.
Okay. I just wanted to check because...
But it might damage the hopes of those wanting to move towards a more united, politically and militarily united Europe.
All right. Our guest this afternoon, of course, and host, Tom Arms of LookAheadNews.com and Look Ahead Radio here on Viewpoints Around the World.
Look Ahead Radio will return in just a moment. Welcome back to Look Ahead Radio. Here is Lockwood Phillips.
Viewpoints around the world with Tom Arms of LookAheadNews.com and Look Ahead Radio. We normally wrap things up with a kind of a humorous issue. We've got one coming up here. Armpit advertising. Okay. Before we get to that, I've got a quick question for you, Tom, and we didn't get into this earlier, and I should have mentioned this. Jean-Claude Juncker, who is the, is he the president of the European Union, or what is his title?
He's president of the Commission.
Commission.
There's the president of the Council and president of the Commission.
Okay.
The Commission is, if you like, the bureaucrats.
Okay.
Who are appointed by the politicians, and the council is the different politicians.
Okay.
There's an environmental council, which is all the environment ministers from each country. There's the European Council, which is all the heads of government. There's a general council, which is the foreign ministers and so forth.
Okay, but back to the quick question for you. Jean-Claude Juncker, met with the president recently and, in fact, announced that there was an opportunity to remove the issue of tariffs in the European community, as something, of course, that the president had inclined to in his conversations with the G7. Quick question for you. Was it covered? How was it covered? Was it seen as a positive note? And finally, very quickly, would that have any kind of benefit on the issue of Brexit? We've only got about 3 minutes to go, so I want to get those answers very quickly if we could.
Yes, it was positively covered, although there's a tone of skepticism in it.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think it would have any impact on Brexit whatsoever, because trade negotiations with UK would be a completely different matter entirely.
Wow. Because this has been one of the issues of tariffs and trade, is it not, with the European Union and with the
Well, it depends. You know, we don't know what's going to be the final outcome of negotiations, if any outcome at all, whether it be a no deal or a deal or whatever. So we don't know what the outcome of that is. It's still very much in the air between the UK and EU. And the US, of course, cannot start negotiations until it knows the outcome of those negotations as well.
It is interesting.
I mean, I think Trump is absolutely right. You know, if you have what's called a soft Brexit, where the British basically continue as members of the EU in all but name,
mm-hmm.
Then what's the point of negotiating a separate free trade deal? You know, if the same regulations apply to both the EU and the UK. But if, on the other hand, you've got a completely separate UK, which has no ties at all to Europe,
mm-hmm.
And is not affected by EU regulations, then yes, there is an opening there for a US-UK trade deal.
All right. We're just curious about that, because that was a big story here in the States. But it was, again, very brief, because so many other items are happening every day now. Let's wrap it up with armpit advertising.
Yeah. Yep. You have to shave your armpit first. It helps if you are an attractive female wearing a sleeveless dress, and you have to be Japanese.
Excuse me?
What it is, there is a Japanese advertising agency called Wakino, which means armpit.
Mm-hmm.
And they are paying 69 euros, which is, no, 69 pounds, which is nearly $100 an hour for attractive women to have advertising decals attached to their armpits. And then they travel the subway and hold on to the subway strap with their arm up in the air. Everyone turns around and look at this attractive female, and it says, "Listen to WTKF,
absolutely
around the world with Lockwood Phillips and Tom Arms."
Absolutely. I can see it now. Tom Arms of LookAheadNews.com and Look Ahead Radio with us this afternoon. And we're already seeing lights light up here on the phone line, in spite of the fact that this portion has been pre-recorded. Folks offering their armpits to such an opportunity. Tom, as always, thank you very much. I look forward to working with you on the campaign for Viewpoints Around the World there in the UK.
You're quite welcome. Always good to talk with you, Lockwood.
Viewpoints Around the World with Tom Arms of LookAheadNews.com and Look Ahead Radio.
Look Ahead Radio is a production of The Talk Station.